Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Jean Thomas.
And I'm Teresa Golden.
Today has another Annie Patch to Plate special, and right on time, as usual. She reviews what she calls soft greens, like lettuce, arugula, and spinach, and as usual, makes my mouth water.
Made for the Shade expert Barbara Brava from Ulster County gives us some much-needed tips on adding height to our shade garden display. And Dee Dee and Jackie take on the horrible squash vine borer and how to defeat it.
Sounds like a pretty cool show, and I know I'm going to learn stuff.
My name's Annie Skubinski. I'm a master gardener volunteer and happy to be part of the Nature Calls podcast team. On today's episode of Patch to Plate, we're talking about greens. The Hudson Valley is lush with edible greens of all kinds. We're seeing a great variety, and today I'll be talking about the softer, pliable greens like spinach and arugula. These are appearing in our gardens and farm stands. Tatsoi and Mizuna are showing up at the farmers markets and in CSA shares. Most of us only need to look out the back door to see dandelion greens. In a recent Centers for Disease Control and Prevention study that looked at the nutritional density of almost 50 different fruits and vegetables, 17 of the top 20 were leafy greens. So get your green on. In general, greens pair really well with garlic and olive oil. Acidic ingredients like lemon and vinegar and grated cheese too, like Asiago, Jack, or Parmesan. One farmer's market we went to was manned by a farming grandma, and no matter what kinds of greens were held up with the question, "How do I cook this?" she said in her grandma gravelly voice, "Sauté it with a little garlic and olive oil." Still makes me smile when I think of her. As soon as I can get my hands on fresh, tender greens from the garden or farm stand, I bring them into the kitchen and start enjoying them. I want you to do the same. Start simply. Refamiliarize your taste buds with rich, dense, earthy flavors of your fresh greens. A couple of quick ideas. Make a simple salad of your baby spinach leaves. Place them in a bowl. Squeeze a little lemon juice on them. Sprinkle them with coarse salt. Drizzle them with olive oil. Toss them and enjoy. Eat them slowly. Savor the flavors of spring. If you can't take the bowl outside and eat it in the sunshine, at least look out the window. If you like a little garlicky flavor, cut a clove in half and rub it around the inside of the bowl before adding the tender greens. Toss the clove in the compost or save it for another use, but your greens will pick up that hint of garlic when you toss them in the same bowl. Or if arugula is the first green at your spring fling, make the same kind of simple salad, substituting arugula instead of the spinach. For add-ins, consider chopped red onions, white beans like cannellini beans, toasted pine nuts, or even a diced pear would be pretty great. One of our staple recipes is a lightened version of cream spinach. Wash 10 or so ounces of spinach and dry it. Use a salad spinner or toss it in a pillowcase. Get out your food processor. Combine a half a cup of cottage cheese, 2 tablespoons of milk, a few teaspoons of grated Parmesan with a small clove of garlic. Add a fat pinch, maybe a quarter teaspoon of smoked paprika, salt and pepper, and 3/4 or so of the spinach. Puree that until it's smooth, and then add the remaining spinach and pulse that a few times until the spinach is incorporated. You only need to warm this for 5, 6, 7 minutes over medium heat until it's warm through. We always add hot sauce to taste, but I leave that up to you, and I'll include the recipe in the show notes. The great thing about having a batch of this in the fridge is it goes with so many things that we routinely eat here. Everything from eggs to pasta to wraps and even to spring lasagna. You can fold a few tablespoons inside an omelet or use it to garnish scrambled eggs. You can cook pasta and while it's draining, warm up the cream spinach. Add the pasta back to the pan, toss to serve, super quick dinner. You can add it to your favorite mac and cheese recipe before you put that in the oven to bake. You can spread it on a tortilla when you're making a lunch wrap. Or you can replace your red sauce with this light and cream spinach as you assemble a spring lasagna. We use thinly sliced and roasted portobellos when we make this. For the portobellos, you can pan roast them or oven roast them. One of our farm stands here in the Hudson Valley sells big bags of spinach. And every spring, we start cruising their corner to see when they're set up and ready to sell. First word gets out that they've set up the stand, and then word spreads quickly when the self-service stand begins their offerings of spinach and rhubarb. Their sign says, self-serve, leave money in the box, and then it goes on to remind visitors that karma exists. It makes me laugh. Tasty cherry tomatoes, as well as carrots, are available in our area throughout the year, even if they aren't ripening in your garden yet. You can take advantage of their availability while celebrating the tender greens that are. Combine with a simple dressing and you can put together a bright salad to celebrate spring. You might think of combining your arugula with shredded carrots, half cherry tomatoes, some shavings from your block of Parmesan, and toss with a whisk dressing of lemon juice, olive oil, and balsamic vinegar. A touch of freshly ground pepper and a pinch of salt. That would be delicious. If you want a classic spinach salad, there's a recipe in our Master Gardener's Cookbook. I'll give you an overview, but if you want to buy a copy, give a call to our office. The idea is to combine a cup or a bit more of tender spinach, a slice of fried, crisp, cooled, and crumbled bacon, and a sliced hard-boiled egg for each person to be served. The ingredients are tossed in a bowl and lightly tossed with your choice of salad dressings. This basic salad also serves as a good base for other seasonal ingredients. Think about strawberries or consider add-ons that are available all year long, like toasted and chopped walnuts or pan-roasted shiitake mushrooms. If you want to make this salad without the bacon, go ahead and do it. You could substitute diced smoked salmon. Like bacon, that pairs really well with both the spinach and the eggs. Or to make a vegetarian version, I'd use spicy chickpeas in lieu of the bacon. I thought I was done for this episode, but let me quickly tell you about my lunch. In a tablespoon of butter, I sweat some finely minced red onions. I added a half a cup of roughly chopped fiddlehead ferns, and while that sauteed on low, I roughly chopped 3 big handfuls of freshly rinsed spinach and 2 ramp leaves. I added that to the pan and let the spinach and ramp wilt. While that happened, I toasted a slice of sourdough rye. I piled the greens on the toast, fried up 2 sunny-side-up eggs, garnished it with a few splashes of chili crisp. Nutritious and delicious. I had a side of crudité, too. For other recipes, please go to the nutrition page on our Cornell website. And enjoy. That's it for this edition of From Patch to Plate. I'm Annie Skibinski.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Stay tuned for Made in the Shade.
Hi, and welcome to Made for the Shade, a recurring feature of Nature Calls that delves into the challenges and rewards of shade gardening. I'm Barbara Bravo, a Master Gardener volunteer with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County. Without a doubt, shade comes with challenges. One of those challenges for me is finding adaptable plants that offer height and gives the beds or borders some variation and visual interest. I've gardened in the same site for the past 35 plus years. I have found both perennials and shrubs that fit the bill.
We're all familiar with the beautiful spring flowering quince. Most varieties of this shrub are indicated for full sun. However, planted in part shade works well too. Just adjust your expectations with regard to flowering. They will flower nicely, only not as abundantly as when planted in full sun. One cultivar, Toyo Nishiki Flowering Quince, is recommended for part shade. The flowers are pink and white, a nice change-up from the traditional red. I have found that planted in bright shade or part shade, that is a spot where the canopy of nearby trees is high, the shrub does very well. This beauty will grow to 6 to 8 feet tall. Light pruning is best as it flowers on old growth. Eastern ninebark is an excellent shrub for tough growing conditions. It is not particular about soil and is tolerant of dry to medium water conditions too. The native species features all green foliage with white flowers. However, growers have been sending new cultivars to the market in an array of colors. Nine barks from dusky purple to yellow are available, and some of the newer varieties offer burgundy, purple, red, orange, and coppery leaves throughout the season. Older varieties, such as Coppertina and Center Glow, are prone to powdery mildew, but newer varieties are more resistant and well worth trying. The blooms are clusters of tiny white or pink flowers that contrast well against the dark or colorful foliage. As the blooms fade, they turn red, adding another feature. Ninebark is available in many sizes, ranging from 5 to 10 feet high and nearly as wide at maturity. Among perennials, giant fleece flower, Persicaria polymorpha, will put on an eye-catching show. It is well-suited to part shade with moist, fertile soil, and this back-of-the-border perennial attracts birds and butterflies. At about 5 feet tall and wide, it definitely makes a statement in the garden. The July creamy white flowers are similar to a stilbe, but more profuse blooming throughout the summer. Unlike some of its relatives, giant fleece flower is a clumping plant and is not invasive. It is a low-maintenance plant that delivers the wow factor to any garden. While classified for full sun in my part shade garden, where it mainly receives late morning to early afternoon sun, it does fine. It is also long-lived. It has been in my garden for more than 10 years. If you live in deer country, this plant is worth considering as deer tend to leave it alone. I admit to weakness for white flowers. White, like other pale colors, stand out in these shady situations. Goatbeard aruncus, another favorite of mine, is a bushy 3 to 6 foot tall plant with about a 3 foot spread. The height and the width vary based on growing conditions. This beauty does well in part shade, where it receives some direct sunlight at some point in the day. In my garden, where it receives bright shade, where the tree canopy is high and the light is bright most of the day, it does very well. It favors fertile, organically rich soil, preferably where the soil remains moist and doesn't dry out. Hot, dry conditions will cause the foliage to decline. The flowers are feathery and plume-like, growing to a foot long, and these flowers attract pollinators, butterflies, and bees as well. If you give this plant a try, be patient. It may take a few years to fully mature. Until next time, I'm Barbara Bravo.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Stay tuned for Pests and Pathogens.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Pests and Pathogen. I'm Dee Dee Thorpe.
I'm Jackie Hayden.
Master Gardener volunteers with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene County. Today we're stepping into the veggie garden to take a look at the squash borer. It's the larval stage of the native clearwing moth. We're interested in the control of this because the larval borers live inside the stem of all the plants in the squash family, since that includes summer and winter squash and cucumbers, as well as pumpkins, gourds, and melons. It's important to know how to recognize the different indicators and prevent that infestation. If you wait until you see the wilting leaves, it may be too late for the affected vines. That means the worms have already eaten the inside vascular tissue of the plant and choked off nutrients to the fruit.
So how do you recognize these little guys? Start with the insect stage. They're what we call the diurnal species and the seizeit moth. That means they fly in the daytime and they mimic wasps in appearance and for protection from predators. They also call the clearwing moths to distinguish them from the usual powder-winged moths. So you can watch for a wasp copycat with a wingspan of about 1 inch to 1.5 inches that show around your vines in late June. The goal in life is to lay eggs in the plant, usually around the stem and the stalks, around the base of the plant. The eggs are dull red and about 1/25 inch in diameter. If you find them, scrape them off. Always try to avoid insecticides because you could be killing many good insects as bad. In a couple of weeks, the borer hatches and drill into stems where the mission is to eat as much as possible. They leave the stems and the pupae. So if you haven't reduced the moth population or the pupae count, the larva may reach full size and make cocoons. The cocoons overwinter in the soil and become pupae in the spring and turn into insects, thus completing the cycle.
Well, our goal is to interrupt the cycle whenever we can. Fortunately, there are a number of gardening practices we can use without resorting to chemicals. Start with floating row covers tucked down on the edges to keep the moths from reaching the plants. Removing the cover when bloom begins. Stay vigilant and watch closely for eggs and little drill holes in the stems. The larvae are not good housekeepers, so you might see some frass, some bug poop, or ooze from the stem. It's early enough that you can go into combat. Either cut a slit in the stem and remove the worm, or take a sharp wire and thread it through the stem to kill the worm. Then push the cut stem back together and heap soil over it so it can make new roots. Sanitation is very important here. Remember, the cocoons can overwinter in the soil, so if you had borers 1 year, you should rotate the crop to another location the next year.
Also, be sure to remove the dead plants so that they don't harbor pests. Litter can be home for the next generation. There's a pesticide approved in New York State, but it's almost as much of a nuisance as the IPM methods we're just described. If you must use chemical means, read the label and remember the label is the law.
Thanks for listening. Please go to ccecolumbiagreen.org for further information. Thank you and goodbye.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.